Blog Talk Radio.
Life, love, and wellness.
Truthful Tuesdays right here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. I am Sandy Rogers, and I'm not only your hostess for tonight, I'm actually the featured guest speaker. So I'm doubly excited to share with you tonight, and I just can't wait to see what my brother William Shafir is going to ask me and pull out of me in reference to my healing processes that I have put into action for myself. However, before we get to that, there's a couple of things that we always do before we get into the meat of the show so that we're all on the same energy level or the same platform, so to speak, as we go into the show tonight. So first and foremost, we give thanks to our ancestors, to all the ancestors for the trials and tribulations, the opportunities and challenges that they face, and that they're still around to help us. All we have to do is call upon their energy, and they're with us. I know that they're here with us every Tuesday because we talk about subjects that are sometimes outside the box, sometimes not even near the box, and they give us whatever we need in order to deliver a message that's plain and simple and that's truthful. So for that, I'm indebted to the ancestors, and we know that we stand on their shoulders for the strength and tenacity that they had to survive what they went through. And so for that, for them having us, for them holding us, or the love that they continuously show us, we just simply give thanks. We give thanks. We give thanks to the ancestors, Ashe. They always kind of take my breath a little bit away from me, so excuse me for that. The next thing we do is we anchor ourselves in what I like to call affirmative reading. It's one of my daily inspirational thoughts that I send out over the internet around the world every day. And this particular one I'm reading from is called Learn to Love Yourself. So what are you really thinking about you these days? Do you believe you are worthy of the goals and dreams you have for yourself? Are you beautiful by your own standards? You can learn to be in love with you at all times and through all circumstances. You learn this by simply doing it without excuse or resistance. Just love who you have become, all of the wonderful lessons you have learned, and all the growth you have experienced. Isn't it grand to count all a blessing? It is your life, your physical existence. It is your heart and your soul that we are celebrating with absolute joy. Love that person at the deepest levels and watch how much better your life becomes. You are doing it for yourself, and that is reason enough. So continue to practice loving yourself until you become a master at it. Truly love without any conditions. To love yourself is the greatest gift you can give to you this day. You can find that at RevSandy.wordpress.com. If you so choose, you can sign up to have those messages delivered to your email inbox every day. And when you wake up, you can share in those readings on a daily basis so that you get lifted up, right, and start your day in a positive, positive manner. So, look, it's all about life. It's all about love, and it's all about wellness. So tonight, our conversation is, yes, even chronic conditions are reversible. And again, I'm the host, the guest speaker tonight, and my brother William Saphir is going to be doing the interviewing, and we're just going to kind of let it ride and roll the way that it needs to do that, right? So audience, you know you're invited to join in the discussion. Comments are always welcome, and our intention is that every voice that want to be heard will be heard. And so you can call in at 516-531-9819 and press 1 to alert us that you want to speak live on air with us. Once your phone line has been opened, if you're not speaking, if you would put your phone on mute, that would make the playback quality so much better. And we appreciate it. A lot of our listeners love to hear the show more than once, or this is a little late for them in the evening, and so they listen to it the next day. And you can listen to any of our shows or all of our shows at our rebroadcast at www.blogtalkradio.com/Sandy Rogers. And my name is spelled SandyRogers. So we're going to have a quick music break, and then when we come on, I'm going to turn this over graciously to my brother William and let him take control of the reins from there, and we'll see what happens. We'll be right back, you guys.
Your music, baby, is so good. Yeah, I'm telling you from the fact, I listen to it. And baby, when it makes you so warm, I feel good. It's good. It's really good. I enjoy it. Yes, baby, I feel it all down through me.
When the sun shines, you're on my mind. Baby, on my mind, when I see
And that voice that you heard, in addition to our nephew, Anthony A.K. King, is our mother, Barbara Brown, who is now an ancestor, and she's also a recorded artist. She didn't know that before she left this earth, but it was such a pleasure and honor that A.K. included that, included her voice on his music. And so I just wanted to bring her into this celebration tonight because I know she's smiling down, and she was the one that introduced us to a more natural path to healing. And so it's no doubt that we want to bring her and celebrate her contributions to why we are enjoying this particular lifestyle. So, Brother William?
I'm here. I'm here, Sandy.
I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right. I appreciate it. And, you know, I was pretty appropriate way to start conversation, you know, because I can just recall, I was thinking as AK was singing and words from Mom to start off and end that song. And I was just thinking back, you know, how she had probably a much bigger impact than she thought she had on us, you know, in terms of just planting the right seeds, you know, and our consciousness at an early stage, you know. You know, I often think, you know, where did all this stuff start, you know? I can recall we always had some kind of garden in the backyard, you know, and maybe some chickens from time to time. But and she was always just focused on trying to to get, live her life on a higher quality and more consciousness, and you know, that's what brought her from LeCount, Louisiana, to Los Angeles, California. You know, that moved, wanting a better life for herself. And I think all of that part of our consciousness, which is, I think, is the main thing, you know, of wanting something better, a higher quality, you know, just better opportunities, you know, better health, you know, all of those things. She was the main one responsible for just cultivating that in us at a very, very early age before we even realized what was happening. Yeah.
Indeed, so. You're absolutely right. And, you know, that wanting something better, it's always elusive. You know, we don't know what it is, you know.
Yeah,
we got
yearning
in our hearts for something different, something better. But we can't describe it because we've never experienced it before. But, yeah, I agree with you totally on that. Yeah.
And she was speaking from a very pretty deep and a very high place. I'm sure she wasn't aware of that. But that's just something that's just part of the human soul, the human spirit, you know, to want to improve, to want to get better, to want to increase, you know. That's just in
right.
you know,
right.
and she just
right.
Spoke from that and expressed that, and I think that was the beginning of our health journey, without us even realizing way back then.
Yeah, I agree, and our spiritual journey, you know, because she was living in complete faith. She had no idea what was going to be at the end of that road, you know, but she knew it was better than what she was experiencing at that particular time. So.
Right. You know, and sometimes it came out as kind of disgust and frustration with the circumstances, you know, that we were living in there in Watts, but she always kind of found a way to work through that, you know. So that's the backdrop, and I think that's where it all started. That's where it all started, you know.
I went to
a chiropractor today because I don't know if you recall, but back when I was in high school playing football and I had that concussion, you know, after ramming my head like the Rams do. I mean, the real animal ram, you know, butting up against each other, you know, and that football, so the injuries didn't really affect me until I was, what, in my 50s, going on my 60s before I really felt the effect of it. But anyway, I was in the doctor's office today, in the chiropractor's office today, and he was describing, you know, he was looking at some of the injuries on my spine, my lower back and in my neck, and he was showing me the damage that was there and describing it. And he described it in such a way that really kind of brought a whole nother light to all the stuff that we've been looking at and studying at here recently, Sandy. And he was talking about what happens when your spine is not aligned properly. What it does, it causes an interference with the signals running up and down your spine.
Exactly.
And
right.
And when he called, I never heard that term used before. He called it interference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he said when with a proper adjustment, what it does, it opens up the spaces so that they can operate better. And what happens, that there's actually signals that's sent, you know, from up and down your spine that actually goes from your spine to every organ and every part of your body. You know,
mm-hmm.
And I just thought about that, you know, in terms of your journey and your experience and how that even might bring even more light to living a higher quality life than we lived before. He said one other thing, and then we'll get right into our conversation. He's about my age. As a matter of fact, I was born in May of 1948, and he was born in September. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So we have a lot in common. But his plan, he had a plan. You know, he said he wanted to live and work well into his 90s, you know. He's working right now, you know, and he's one of the best in his field out there right now. But he said he want to work well into his 90s, and he said when he dies, he said his plan is to be healthy all the way up until the time he dies. When he dies, he said I just want to die in my sleep.
That's it.
I said I like that. I said, and that's a plan.
I do too. Yep.
Yeah.
And he'll
probably achieve
it too. So.
Yeah. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing happened in the last couple of days, which kind of prepared me to serve you this evening by just being your mirror, you know. And and that was that there was this guy that I had some business meeting, I think it was. When I saw him, he was suffering, you know. He had allergies and he had a bath, you know. And the man was in so much discomfort and distress. Until I told him about that NAET, that process that eliminated all the allergies that I came down with a few years ago. And so he saw me at an event this past Saturday, and I didn't recognize him at first, but he made a point to catch up with me later on during the evening and remind me that we had met and what our conversation was. And he said he followed up on it. And found a practitioner of that NAET method, and that now he said after 20 years of suffering, he said he had tried everything, and he couldn't get rid of his allergies. He said, but now he's just about allergy free.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You
so
don't
so
know what we don't know.
We don't know, you know. And I'm just thinking about, you know, you're sharing your story, how valuable. We don't know what value it's going to be to anyone out there that's listening that might need it themselves or something they can pass on to someone else. So what you're doing, Sandy, I commend you for it. And I'm sure that both of us are going to get something out of this experience. So Sandy.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Now, your experience is one of those stories that I'm sure a lot of medical professionals, not all of them, but too many of them are kind of still stuck in the dark and contributing to not to our health, but to the health and pharmaceutical industry more than they're contributing to our health and welfare. But mm-hmm. your story actually should give hope to those that really want to serve and help improve our condition so that we can live our lives fully. So I think the best place to start is why don't you share with those who are listening what may have gotten both you and myself, as a matter of fact, in such need of corrective measures later in our life in terms of, you know, what we experienced during childhood that affected our health. Because I think people need to hear that, you know, what things that we did or didn't do, things that were good for us and the things that were harmful to us that we never even thought about, especially as children. You know, even coming on up into our teens and our young adult and raising our families and the whole nine. So why don't you start there? Just back up and kind of check into your memory bank and see what are the things you think contributed to your not only to your health but also to your conditions that troubled you later in your life.
I think what I can remember in going backwards in time is that always, every time the seasons changed, we were lined up and we took our castor oil or the 360s and we chased it down with the peppermint and the orange juice. And, you know, that helped to flush us out. And we did that as long as I could remember, you know, that was a part of our seasonal change was to get, like, what we had put in our bodies the three preceding months, you know, we were washing all of that out in order to prepare for this new season. And I know that that directly relates to how you do your gardens, you know, like you plant for the season and then you, you know, take all of that up and then you plant your new plants in the ground. And so that's one of those cyclical things that happen. And we weren't explained any of that. We just had to mm-hmm. take that castor oil, you know, and we didn't fuss, we didn't fight, but we stayed healthy. You know, we yeah. never were sick with flu and you know, some of all of those other chronic conditions and things like that. But I do remember a change happened right as I graduated from high school, which would have been like around 68, and Janice had graduated in 64, and it was all mm-hmm. in that same 68, 69, 70 year period, and that was when all of these medications first hit the market, and the doctors were just in awe, or they were truly believing that these miracle drugs were now on the market and they could save us. You know, we wouldn't have to experience any type of illness that would lay us up or anything like that if we just took these medicines. And so for our sister Janice, she was prescribed a steroid that they kept her on too long. And one of the things that I do know for as far as I'm concerned, and I'm going to put this on my knowledge so that I'm not giving false information about how things really operate, but to my understanding, these medications are not proved or studied or evaluated long enough so that when it hits the market, it could be in a very safe manner, and the companies can say this will make you better and not worse. But as we've learned over these last 20, 30 years, that that is normally not the case. And what the pharmaceutical companies, so they, when they first develop some type of a drug, they put money aside to handle malpractice and harm done to a human that consumes these different concoctions that they've come up with, so that it's like the loss is not as great as what they can make. So they would rather make the extra money, and if they happen to damage someone along the way, then they'll take from this other pot of money and pay those individuals off. Like with autism, with our children, they know that those vaccines that they give these babies, it's not going to do well for all of them. And so there's been a fund set up for that for years and years and years. Some people know about it. Some people don't. Some people take advantage of it. And those that don't know, of course, they can't take advantage of it. And so we became hypnotized by the white coats. That's what I like to call them. They have this magical power over us. And once they tell us that we have ABC 123 and we got to take this medication and this medication in order to combat or to maintain or to manage. They never say heal. They never say cure. They say manage or maintain whatever they diagnose you with. And so like in my case, told 19, 20 years old that I had a peptic ulcer and that I would have to take this medication. It was called Tagamet, T-A-G-A-M-E-T. And that M-E-T stood for a metal that was in the medication. But I took it just like the doctor. Dr. Hershey told me. I mean, I took it every day, every day, every day. And one day I was attempting to go to work, and I was started vomiting. I had diarrhea. And then it looked like something was coming out of my skin, you know, like out of my pores. I was like, oh, my God, what is this, right? And wow. it looked like mercury from out of a thermometer, you know, the little grayish stuff that come out, right? And so I got to work, and my fingernails started turning blue, and I was just beside myself. I didn't know what to do at that point. And so my coworker was a medic in the military, and he had me to sit down. So he's checking me all out. I didn't even know, you know. He's like, oh, my God, her fingernails are turning blue. You know, that's a person that's, you know, getting ready to check out of here. So he called for the paramedics. He called mom and told her she needed to come to the office right away to escort me to the hospital. And they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And I'm in there. I'm taking all kind of, you know, like upper GI, lower GI, taking that chalky stuff, drinking that. And they just could not figure it out. So the guy come around that takes the history of the medications that you're on. And I said, well, I'm only taking one, and it's Tagamet for my ulcer. And he said, well, ma'am, you don't have an ulcer. I said, well, see, it worked. So, you know, it can't be that that's causing me the problem. And he says, no. He says, once you have an ulcer, it will always show on your x-ray. So what you've gone through is a misdiagnosis, and the medicines that you've been taking for all of these years have literally poisoned your system. And so you have such an overload of this crap. He didn't say crap. But you have such an overload of this stuff in your body that it's just coming out every way that it can, you know. So that was just, like, so scary to me, you know. Like, I thought Dr. Hershey had given me something that was going to help, you know. So that was mine. And at the same time, Janice was going through, that's our sister. So Janice was going through the issue with the medication that was having her to become addicted to it, like some junkie out on the street. That was the type of effect that it had on her. And it's, you know, after a while, it's helping to to shut down all her organs, you know, like her liver and her kidney and her bladder and, her, you know, all of that. So what we thought was for our best, because we were relying on the white coats to be true to us. I don't think at the time we were familiar with the Tuskegee experiment and all of that. You know, we were trusting and believing, right, that these people with these white jackets that had gone to school knew exactly what they were doing to help us out. And then another little trivial matter that I found in some of my studies is that the guy that actually created the AMA, the American Medical Association, he killed his wife with some concoctions, some chemicals that he had made up. So, you know, here we go by a system that we think is just for our good, and the way that it was even created was fallible. So,
wow. You know, that is interesting. Yeah. I've heard it reported, you know, and this is not my opinion, but this can be researched, that third leading cause of death is misdiagnosis from medical doctors.
Exactly.
The third leading cause of death.
Yeah.
You know, so,
that's outrageous.
That just suggests something. Okay, just give me some input on that, Sandy. What, in terms of us taking, instead of giving the responsibility for our health to somebody else, I don't care who it is, you know, your mama, your daddy, your brother, your sister, your husband, your wife, your children, your best friend, your next door neighbor, the stranger, I mean, to whoever, you know, especially to a pharmaceutical company, industry rather, that's set up to profit from your sickness, you know.
To the extent that they have already set aside money at the beginning of their development of that form, drug, that prescription pill, they've already set money aside knowing that it's going to injure people. That's what can really piss you off. You know, like you already know. So why is it allowed on the market? FDA, why aren't you doing your doggone job? Don't let that crap come out until it can prove to be effective with people, you know? So
You know, and I want everybody to understand that our family, it may sound like we're extreme in this kind of a thing, but we're reasonable. You know, if something is needed, you know, and if there's a need for care from an MD, we're not against that, you know. But just taking responsibility for your own health, you know, full responsibility for it, not giving it to the doctor. You know, you go to the doctor for help, but the first thing, you know, that the doctor says when you get there, he asks you what your problem is. How can I help you? You know,
right?
And if you don't tell him what your problem is and tell him what you know, where you're hurting and what you think is wrong with you, then he's completely lost. You know, he don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, human body.
Mm-hmm.
Now when I was having my conversation with the chiropractor today, and he's an excellent chiropractor, by the way. And so in our conversation, you know, he basically started the same way, you know, asking me, you know, how can I help you? And, of course, I told him that, you know, I don't really have any serious problem right now. I'm experiencing some pain too often, and my goal is to be in, you know, 100% state of wellness as much as possible, often as can, for the rest of my life. You know, that's my goal, you know. And that was just reflecting the same thought he had. But he was willing to give me all the information that I was willing to retain and ask questions about. He was just giving it up, you know. And so that was just confirming for me the proper approach to wellness is for the person that has the condition. They call it us patients when we come into a medical professional or practitioner. We're usually called the client or the patient. But it's our responsibility for our health, you know.
Right.
And the ultimate decision is not in the hospital's hands. It's not in the doctor's hands. I don't care how much of a specialist they are, that the decision for our health is in our hands. And we can give it to them
exactly.
if we want to.
Yeah.
But we don't have to. I want to speak to that for a minute, Sandy, if you would.
Sure, sure. You know, so I've been on this conference today for about 3 hours, and we had back-to-back breakout sessions. And so I led this discussion several times with individuals. And so my position on that is you're the one that's been with your body longer than anybody, longer than your mother, because she held you for 9 months, but then once you came out, you know, spending more and more time by yourself, which took away from the time that she was around you. And so you know how your body reacts to certain things. You may have a certain reaction to a certain smell that nobody else has. You may not be able to smell like everybody else smells, or maybe like in my case, if I consume gluten products, that's your bread and your cakes and pastas and things like that, if I consume too much of that, I swell up like a jellyfish and my eyes become slits and I can't see. Everything is swollen up in my face. And then my skin will start breaking out in a rash. I don't need for someone to tell me how I react because I'm living with it, right? I know that.
Right.
So it's my responsibility then not to consume those things that give me those reactions or those conditions. And it's like with anyone else, why would you have to wait to go to the doctor for the doctor to tell you, well, you need to cut back on ketchup or you need to cut back on salt or whatever? And you know that every time you sprinkle that more salt on your food that you swell up, you know. But we want to give the responsibility over to someone else to be able to tell us what we should and shouldn't do. And I think that that's putting too much responsibility outside of yourself. And when you love on yourself, then you will find the ways to make sure that you're doing everything to honor this precious body temple. And another thing that I was saying throughout the day on this conference was that the Creator has crafted us so masterfully that if you cut your finger or a razor blade or anything, if you cut your finger and if you put no pressure, no alcohol or no Band-Aid on it, I'll bet you $1,000 you can watch your finger mend back to where there is no sign of that cut ever happened on your finger. That's how powerful our bodies are. Our bodies know how it was designed and how to get back to that state of perfection. It knows that when you start eating these chemicals that's been created in these laboratories and you're eating fast foods, you're eating crap that you have no idea what it is, where it came from, because you were nowhere around it when it was being prepared. Or you go into a store, and this was one of my issues I'm going to bring up shortly, was eating, being addicted is what I called it eventually, to Lay's potato chips. I had to have some, and it was so funny. It was like I was a little kid. I was sneaking them, you know, and like eating them up while nobody was around me and stuff, because I know it didn't make sense, right? And so we do this to our bodies.
Isn't that the one Malaysia said we can't eat just one?
Yeah.
Wasn't
and
that the
you
same potato chip?
Do you know why, William? Because these food companies take individuals, they pay individuals to come in to do taste tests. and you're hooked up your brain, and it knows what additives to put into the foods to make you not be able to just eat one, because they're measuring your pleasure center in your brain. And when it reaches a certain level, then they know, okay, we got to add that to this food. Another thing that we need to be more conscious about, too, is in the inner city, lower economic communities, there usually you'll find a lot of really hot, spicy foods, like flaming hot, what are those, Doritos or Cheetos or somebody. But that's in our neighborhoods. You don't find those same type of with that red dye in it, because they know that red dye that's in food causes some mental issues, and particularly for our young men. And so we're actually feeding our sons and our grandsons this stuff that is going to have a negative effect on them in the long run as they reach their 20s, mid-20s and 30s, because that dye that they put in there to make it that spicy and stuff that we think is all cool and everything is dangerous for our children to consume that. Each one of those dyes, the blue, the red, the yellow, the orange, they all have a side effect. And that's why you see we have a tendency to use those foods to calm our children down. That's why they're at the checkout stands. You have all those different color bags, orange, yellow, red, and some blue right there as you're checking out. And 9 times out of 10, there's a young child, they're going to want one of them bags, and the parents are going to put it in the shopping cart. They go with it, not even realizing how damaging that could be to the overall health. And let me just say this about food, and then we could get back. Back in February of this year, our Grady Hospital here in Atlanta is like the big county general hospital in LA. It's the hospital that serves the lower economic community. And back in February, Grady Hospital came out and made an announcement that they were going to begin using food as medicine. So they wanted to start doing some nutritional teaching with the medical staff, and they wanted to see what effect the food had on their clinical conditions. I thought that was incredible. They were going to be using, there's a farmer's market right by Grady Hospital, the Jesse Hill Market, and the Auburn Farmers Market, and they were going to be getting their food from those places to use as organic a food substance as they could with their patients. I thought that was outstanding. And then today, a real close sister friend sent out a text to a group of us to let us know that Senator Cory Booker was having a Senate hearing today on the same topic, food as medicine. And these awesome. Individuals that came, so it was a Dr. John Bolger, a Dr. Kevin Volpe with the Fresh Food Pharmacy. And they were able to provide statistics and proof that when a person eats the correct foods, that they can lower their numbers to within a safe level, that using food as medicine is a more effective, efficient way to treat people than with chemicals and foreign objects into their bodies. And then there was this one young lady that was a part of the team. Her name was Leah Pennyman. And she was very adamant about making sure people understood that the nutritional needs of indigenous people of color and black people were different from those of other races, and that the food distribution from some of these large companies is contrary to our healthy lifestyle, and that people, the indigenous people of color and black people, know what's good for them to consume, and it's really should be considered as a culture of health. However, the large food distribution companies is not obeying or listening to or giving any weight to what the people are telling them that they want to eat. And then another interesting statistic that they shared was 23% of young people do not currently qualify on services, with the main reason being they are obese.
Wow.
And they know it's directly created by the things that we're consuming. I just thought that was such a beautiful hearing that took place today. And Cory Booker, Senator Cory Booker, he's on YouTube, and you can listen to that Senate hearing on food as medicine. It was on today, and just a lot of different information. But people are these organizations, these leaders, these politicians, they're understanding that food is a very integral part of our wellness and our health and, you know, our overall livelihood. And so there was this one guy, though, he was really interesting to me, a Senator Marshall. I don't know what state he was from. And his whole concern was, why are we getting away from the established food pyramid? Because he thinks that whole milk should be reinstated and given back to the children, and that meatless Mondays is going to cause potential problems because there's less protein in the diet. And everybody had just testified right what was going on. So I just thought it was really kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one thing for sure, goodness is definitely on the rise. No matter how much these folks, you know, try to throw us back into darkness, you know, it just won't work anymore, you know?
Yeah.
It just won't.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's nothing can keep us moving forward better than good quality information, you know, knowledge, not only of the harm that's being done and the problems that we're facing right now, but more importantly, you know, things that we can do to take charge of our own health, you know, and our own future.
Exactly.
You know, I don't care how many dollars you got coming into your bank account, through your job or through your business. If your health is destroyed, forget it. The money won't do you.
That's true.
Without good health, you know, your quality of life is just diminished. You know, even your thinking is diminished. You know, if you don't have good health, your health is extremely important. You know,
and just
you know, a lot of times when we talk about health, you might just say, you know, I think what they attribute to Hippocrates, I think his name was, the Greek, that came up with that saying about, you know, food is medicine, medicine is food. That's good, you know. But we have to take it a little bit further than that, and we got to look at the whole spectrum, and I'm going to speak to this in a minute, of what it means to be healthy, you know, because when you just say eat healthy, even if you say eat organic, you know, if you don't know what that means, that's not going to do you much good, you know.
Right, and that's why I just wanted to bring up that one little part of it, you know, using food as medicine, because you're absolutely right. It's not just that one component, you know, but because we're multidimensional human beings, and so we're not just, you know, a single layer, and that's just food. No, you know, there's a lot more to us. We're complex individuals.
Yeah.
So, you know, well, we've got
I had
two
a conversation.
Callers, William.
Good.
Okay, so I want to go ahead and acknowledge them, and then I want to come back and just kind of give my own numbers to let people know what I've done to change my insistence once again about, you know, being put on medicines and that I did not. Okay, we got three now, so okay. So our first caller is 562-668. You want to give us your name and the input, question, or concern you have, please?
Most certainly. This is your brother, Ken Akbar. Greetings of peace and love to my amazing
Ken.
And wonderful brother and sister.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Greetings, Ken.
Greetings.
Again, I'm not sure if your listeners are aware of the work that the influence that the two of you have had not only on my life, but even as it relates to the work that I have been involved with and that I'm still involved with, and we appreciate the two of you so much. But all that you said, I deal with on a regular basis as it relates to the work that I do in the community. You know, I recall as a child, one of the phrases that was shared with us was about generational curses. You know, you really couldn't make any connection really in terms of what that meant. But I've told people that I've been working with that they could do case studies in the community that I'm in, as it relates to health and wellness, because some of these horrible lifestyle choices have been passed on from one generation to the next, one generation to the next, from one generation to the next. So we've been in groups evaluating on what it is we can do to sort of break this horrible cycle of people, the poor food choices and things that people are making that's keeping them trapped, you know, in this cycle of chronic illness and disease. One of the great things that we've been involved with lately is that the Morehouse School of Medicine has done something unprecedented. They assigned 11 medical students, first-year medical students, to the MPUY, which has 11 communities in it, and Jordan is one of them. And I've had the pleasure. They've assigned them to us for an entire semester, so they'll be with us until May.
Wow.
And I've had the pleasure of interacting with these young, passionate, talented young people, you know, that are excited about ways in which they can give back. And they made it clear to us that something that the curriculum now at the Morehouse School of Medicine, they're teaching them to look at the whole human being, you know, in terms of healing, you know. And
awesome.
So I've been interacting with them, and it's been about 4 or 5 weeks now, and they did their initial assessment and gave us an amazing presentation via Zoom before Thanksgiving, and I'm going to make sure that I forward their findings to you and William after this show.
Okay.
But, you know, one of the things that was disclosed, which reveals what you're talking about now, is that really with all that we've got available to us today, I think we're in an atmosphere of more abundance than we've ever had in terms of our experience here in this country. But yet we have some of the worst health disparities. For example,
right,
in the medical students' initial findings, that they did this amazing presentation for us via Zoom, they identified the fact that Fulton County, which is the largest county in the city of Atlanta, and that's where I am right now in Fulton County, has the worst health disparity of any county in the United States. It has the highest statistics in heart disease, diabetes, and high blood pressure. And they also identified other socioeconomic disparities that are prevalent here. So, yes, this is a needed dialogue. We certainly appreciate, you know, you guys delving into this, and we appreciate the work that you do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate you, Ken.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm real curious about that study, too, so please share it.
Yeah, I'm going to forward that to you and William via email. They just sent it to me about a few days ago, along with a play that was done. I was fortunate to be at an award ceremony at the Art Exchange over by Tyler Perry Studios a week ago, mm-hmm. where they awarded these young people for the play that they did about the 1906 race riots and massacre that took place here in Atlanta. So I have a copy of that play. I'm going to forward that to the two of you as well.
Wow. Great. Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Much appreciation.
Appreciate it. Yes.
All right. And our next caller is area code 214-370. You want to give us your name and your comment, concern, or question, please?
Yes. Greetings. My name is Wale Udine Sabir, Abdul Sabir. A good friend of my good friend, Dale Williams. My comment, first of all, is I really appreciate this conversation. It is not only necessary, it is drastically needed. And I want to, my comment is some years ago in my first book, I had made an observation. And that observation was that in when you look at in it, they say, according to people who deal with nutrition, they say that any balanced diet contains five basic components, vitamins, minerals, carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. Mm-hmm. And the observation I made is that when they refer to us as a three-fifths being, that was not really an accident. It really was a description of the type of life that they had designed, not just for the slaves, but really for the whole populace, and that is to reduce the people to what I call to objectify people in both when you everything that the source creator created has frequency. And the food, the slave diet was mostly a diet of low frequency diet because you had very little vitamins and minerals, and they of course it was designed to just give you enough to sustain yourself or enough to provide the work. So we can look at that three-fifths concept, on many levels, and which I won't in depth to really go through at this point. But the point I really wanted to emphasize is that these low-frequency foods that, and I would say, just listening to the previous caller, about Fulton County, we know that Fulton County has a high population of our people, and the slave diet, the what we call soul food, those things are high contributors to those ailments and those conditions, and it's a crime that we don't our institutions, our schools don't really take up the study to see the impact that these things have in this ongoing. It's not being the trend is being made fattish as opposed to really showing us the detriment in these areas. There's a lot more that I could say, but I just won't take up any more time. I just wanted to point that out because it's very important that we understand that connection between frequency and the type of foods that that we are being conditioned to consume.
Indeed.
So I'll leave it at that.
Indeed. Well, thank you, Brother Sabir. I appreciate that. You know, that's another thing for us to expand our awareness on is the frequency of the food. So, you know, if it's a low frequency, that means that it has very little value to a living specimen, which we are. You know, so when when you have a living food, then that is a high frequency, and that's more in tune with who we are as living beings. And so you may want to, you know, look at that or weigh that when you're out purchasing what you're going to eat next. You know, is it low or high frequency? And it does definitely make a difference in how you carry yourself and how you enter. Relate to other people as well. So thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome. So one of the things, before William asks another question, I wanted to make sure I did this right quick. So there was a time in my life, and it wasn't that long ago, where I did not have not health insurance. And I was not working on a job. And so I was, in order to get my health care needs met, I went through the DFACS department, I think it was, in order to get some type of coverage. And what that whole experience there taught me a lesson in as far as it appeared to me that if you went through those doors, they were going to find something wrong with you in order to put you on a prescription. And then I believe there were a number of us that was not taking the prescriptions that they were writing out for us. And so then it became a rule that you had to bring your bottles in or you wouldn't be seen by the doctor. And, of course, I wasn't even having my prescriptions filled, so I didn't last very long in that system. But, you know, and then they were telling me that my blood pressure was high, and I'm like, but it's not. I'm working out with a personal trainer, and the trainer is taking my blood pressure before and after our sessions. It's always normal. It's always good. Why is my blood pressure only high when I come here to your office? And so then I bought my own cuff to do my own readings, and they wanted to tell me that my cuff was malfunctioning. But I and my personal trainer, we were getting the same reading. So I was like, I don't think it's ours. I think it may be yours. And so anyway, took it in with me one time. And sure enough, mine read normal, theirs read high. And so I think there may be some disparity going on there with false readings to, you know, to put you on certain medications. Say for high blood pressure and things like that, that's just something that I noticed. I'm not saying that is absolutely 100% true, but do your own research on your own body before you start claiming or accepting what you're being told is wrong with your body. So in the years of 2019 and 2020, I did not go to a doctor due to the pandemic and change over in Medicare to a new health provider, things like that. And while I was in that time frame, you know, a lot of people were shut down and shut in, didn't come out, didn't socialize, didn't fellowship with people. And so that caused a lot of disruption in how we were as a community with one another. You know, we really didn't do a lot of sharing, and you know, and the Zooms got on my nerves real quickly because I couldn't take all of that energy coming from those monitors to my body. I've always been real sensitive to electronics and things like that, and so I took to the chips, you know, and whatever else was people call comfort food and things like that. And I didn't do it consciously, but I knew that I was getting further and further away from, as Brother Sabir said, I was getting closer and closer to a constant array of low-frequency foods and pulling further and further away from the high-frequency foods, which my body had become accustomed to. So in February of this year, I did my first blood workup panel, and my numbers came back, and the doctor, which was my first visit with her, was ready to put me on cholesterol pills that at that visit. She's like, oh, no, you know, your numbers are high. You got to take these pills. And I was like, no, ma'am. I'm like, you know, I don't mean any disrespect, but I don't have any foreign substances in my body. So give me 6 months, and when I come back, and if my numbers have not gone down, I will take your medication. But let me do what I know to do best with my body. I know my body. And she looked at me, you know, like I was kind of whacked out a little bit, but she said, okay, 6 months, but no longer than 6 months. So I cut out all the foolishness in my eating habits and went back to what I knew had always worked for me. And but in that time frame, though, had a couple of real close people to make the transition in my family, and had was doing a lot of traveling. And right at the end, I had gone back to California for a funeral and a wedding, and I just everything, all caution was thrown to the wind, I think is how they say that. And when I got back was when I remembered, oh, my God, I got to take these blood tests again before I go to the doctor. And I had promised the lady that I was going to take the pills if my numbers didn't come down. So I just want to lay that little groundwork. So when I get to her office, you know, she was just jumping all over the place. She's like, what have you done? How did you do this? I want to know. I want to know. So I could tell the rest of my patients, because you don't need medicine now. You all good. Your numbers are really good. How did you do it? And I said, well, I just told you. I knew to cut out all that processed stuff, all those fake foods, and get back to eating live foods. So my numbers went down for the total cholesterol. It was 206 in February, and the range was 100 to 199. And then when I went back in August, it was down to 176. So I dropped 30 points off of my total cholesterol. And then on the LDL, it was 156 in February, and the normal range on that was 0 to 99. Now, it still came in a little high. It came in at 100. But that's down 56 points from what it was in just 6 months earlier. And then my LDL to HDL ratio, the range is 0.0 to 3.2. And back in February is 1.8. And in August, it was 1.6. The doctor was just ecstatic. She said, I have never seen anybody do anything like this. You know, and so what did you do? Maybe my other patients could do it too, and they could come off their pills. But, you know, so if we don't think it's possible, and I really, you know, took what she said sincerely, you know, she wasn't trying to pull my leg or anything, because she really wanted to put me on the pills, you know. But if we could just figure out for ourselves, you know, what's the best thing for our bodies. You know, we have a Ken Akbar was talking about the generational curses, and we think that we got to keep eating this stuff. And, you know, I hear all the time people say, well, you know, my big mama ate like this, and so I don't think anything's wrong with it. Well, it wasn't for big mama and them, because nobody was paying attention to what they were eating. But you come in and you have these food manufacturers, and they're saying that a lot of the chicken is being consumed by people of color. And so now what we have, chickens that go from an egg to a full-grown chicken in 2 weeks, and they got these big old pieces of chicken, and you wonder why our girls are getting breast cancer and all kind of cancers early. It's because of the hormones that they're injecting into these chickens that we won't seem to put aside, that's causing us to develop this cancer earlier in our children. Do your own research,
you know,
if you don't believe me.
You know, and you know, Sandy, that's so important. You know, you said one thing, but first you got to think it's possible. Because most of us don't even stop long enough to really think that we could really, really, really live a healthy life. We could get control. We could eat good, healthy food, you know, and so we stop ourselves dead in our tracks, you know, because we don't even think it's possible.
Yep.
You know, and I had the conversation today with my chiropractor. I told him, I said, look, I said, you know, you tell me, you know, because I know he's committed, and I knew that, and he's very healthy. He's almost 75, he'll be 75, you know, in September coming up, and he looks real good. You know, he's working full time still as a physician, and so we had the conversation. So I said, listen, you tell me now. My plan, I said, I'm taking a lot of supplements, you know, and they're supposed to be the best out on the market, you know, and I had some issues that I wanted to correct, because my goal always is to be in the best health I can possibly be in. I said, but my goal is not to stay even on the supplements. I said, my goal is to grow as much of my own food as I possibly can, right on my front yard if I have to, and to have it dense enough in terms of nutrients in those plants that I'm growing. In other words, good healthy plants, not just greens to be eating collard greens, but no, healthy collard greens. We've got everything in
exactly.
That collard green is supposed to be in there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's my goal, you know, and to even wean myself, and I know you've done it already, Sandy, to even wean myself off of supplements, you know, and let medicine really be, let my food really be my medicine. You know, I said, what do you think about that? And so he said, yeah, that's definitely an excellent goal. He said, oh, you could do a combination of both, but that's an excellent goal. But first you got to think it's possible. So I told him, you know, I don't anticipate that happening like overnight, but as soon as possible. That's what I'm working toward. So you got to have a plan, and then you have to put the plan in motion. You got to get started somewhere. Why don't you speak to that, Sandy? Because I know you're already doing a community gardening thing, and that's about to change, so. Give some listeners where to get started, you know, on this mission, on this journey.
Thank you, William. Excellent question. So you can start a garden in an apartment that doesn't have any outdoor space. You can do herbs in the window and on your kitchen table, close to the window, and things like that. There's even a process where you can grow very nutritious herbs through rocks, and that is a process that I've learned. So I've picked up, and I'm always making myself available to learning new methods and new methodologies, and wanting to see the science behind it, you know. So you say this is healthier. Tell me why. Show me why. And so if you can infuse just a little bit into what you're eating, you know, like do some dill or some cilantro or some parsley, oregano or something, you know, you can use those fresh herbs in your food if that's all the space that you have for to grow. Or you can look in your neighborhood for a community garden. They're popping up everywhere around the country, and to provide space for individuals. And like William was saying, you know, if you're in a home, Perhaps you can put containers outside if you don't want to dig up the yard, you don't have space, or you're renting and the landlord is telling you, no, you can't put a garden out front, then buy some containers and plant your vegetables and things like that, your tomatoes, you know, things like that, in those containers. You can use the shopping bags that what they put your food in when you go to the store, put your dirt and soil in there, and your seeds. Those work extremely well. So you don't even have to spend any more money on pots and planters, but just use what you have and create and start. And once you start, I promise you, once you start growing your own food, you will start looking for ways how you can expand and what else you can add to it. It's nothing like it in the world. And the taste is so different. And I know Ken, he has a community growing situation in his front yard, and he can't even eat everything that he's growing, but it's there for the neighbors. It's there for that community of Joyland. And so they come and they pick what they want and they go back home, you know, so that the older community, they don't even have to be bothered with planting and harvesting, because Ken has already done it. They just need to let him know what they want, and he takes it to them. So there's different ways that you can go about accomplishing that. Again, just know what you need to do for yourself. And William had also brought up the fact about, you know, don't get stuck on just the food. No, it's not just the food. We need to be moving our body every day. So if you're sitting and spending a lot of time at the computer, get up every hour and walk through the house, or, you know, do some stretches or some bends or something right at your computer while you're, you know, on a call or looking at the screen or doing whatever you're supposed to be doing. Get in that peace. Get into that place of calm. And you can call it meditation, you can call it your spiritual practice, whatever you want to call it. But you want to keep as many facets of your life. So that's the spiritual, the mental, the emotional, the energetic, the nutritional part, and all of that. You want to make sure that you stay in balance, and that's what keeps your life on an upward swing. And I don't mind, you know, telling people my age, because I'm pretty proud of it, you know. Like, I take no pills, and doctors, so I've had two in the last 5 years that, you know, want me to come in and talk to their patients, which that's a high honor to me, because just guess what, you know, the doctors aren't going to make that much money as those people get well, but those doctors, those two lady doctors, they really want me to do some work with their patients. And, you know, that has got to be commendable. You know, like, really? You know, you would risk your practice to do something like that? So, like I think William has said, you know, times are changing, and we're changing it for the best. You are your own best doctor. You know your body more than anyone else alive. Don't shrug responsibility.
Speak to this. Here's a question. I said I'm gonna pose this question. That's a good time to do it. Does old age and sickness naturally just go together?
No.
I think we think it. I think just because I'm getting old, that means I'm supposed to get sickly and more sickly and more sickly. What do you think about
that? No, not at all. Because, look, our dad died a few months ago in May of this year at the ripe young age of 102 years old. 3 days before he got up out of here, he didn't think anybody was paying any attention to him. I got video to prove it. He laying in his bed, supposed to be unable to move, and he doing exercises in the bed. on both legs and stretching and everything. He knew, and that was one thing that I learned from my dad and from nobody else. As long as you keep moving your body, you can keep using your body. When you stop moving it's going to start tightening up on you and, you know, kind of doing some stuff you don't want it to do. But as long as you move your body, and you don't have to get old unless you buy into that nonsense. It's just like, well, I'm gonna say it, y'all. Y'all forgive me if it don't sound right to you. But that's just like when we came out, when the information around the COVID came out and you had to stand 6 feet away from the person by you, in front of you, and back of you. So what? That virus knew that it could only jump 6 feet. You know, that was just something really crazy to me. I'm sorry. I'm just, you know. So, you know, your body don't know that you turned 52 and now you're supposed to have arthritis, or, you know, your blood pressure is supposed to go sky high and all that. No, man, I ain't got none of that. I'm 72 and a half.
Yeah, I'm 74 and almost 75. And listen, you don't have to be sick just because we got to die. Now, we're going to die, you know. But just like the doctor was telling me today, his plan is to work all the way up through his 90s. And when he does die, he said he's going to go to sleep and don't wake up. I said, that's cool. Right. I love that. You don't have to, you know. But if you get this thought in your head, you accept that mm-hmm. I'm going to get sick, or I'm sick because guess what? Your body will obey that. Yield to that. If you give give energy to that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
And it's not just positive thinking. Your thoughts produce your reality.
And right there.
Scientists today. Yeah, the quantum mm-hmm. scientists are saying that today. Your thoughts produce your reality. So if you think sick, you're going to get sick. If you think wellness,
and
you'll find a way to be well, stay well. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah. No, what I was going to say is a lot of us will make little crazy statements to ourselves. Oh, that's Arthur. You know, Arthur, come to visit me and all that kind of stuff. But when we say those nonsensical things to ourselves, our bodies don't know that we're joking and playing around, supposedly. It hears what you're saying, that Arthur comes to visit you every night around 6:15. So guess what? Every night at 6:15, you start having pains and aches in your body. Change it around. Change your language.
Yeah.
Your words, your words create your reality. So begin by thinking positive thoughts about your overall health and wellness. You know, you're entitled to a life of good living, a life that's free of any ailments. You have a perfect existence in this earth, in this physical plane. And it's yours. It's just that simple. It's yours. So don't play with it. Don't joke with it. Don't think that, you know, because you are saying, oh, I'm just joking, that it's going to vanish into the thin air. It does not. Trust me on that. It does not. So keep your mind, keep your thoughts positive. My granddaughter used to say when she was real little, there was no such thing as depression. Your tickle box just needed to be filled up. So go fill up your tickle box.
Yeah, love it, love it.
Yeah. So that's
one last thing
for me.
Sam, explain energy healing, especially the Reiki part of it, but just explain energy healing. A lot of people not even aware of that, or they're afraid of it, or if they're afraid to even consider it. Just share that, a little bit on that as we close out.
Okay, that's really interesting too, William, because it's a proven fact, because there are, from what I understand, because I've not been to Egypt yet, that the hieroglyphics have different Reiki and yoga positions, you know, carved on the walls. And so that goes to prove a point that these are African practices that were established eons and eons ago. And so everything in the universe is energy, everything. And like you were talking about the quantum physics earlier, you know, so you can speak positive words over water and the water will come back to bless your body, or you can speak negative words to that water, and of course the opposite would happen to that. And so what Reiki and what energy healing, from sound healing to Reiki to Tai Chi to Qigong, what those are is getting your body in alignment with the natural energetic energies of our body temples. We have chakra centers or energy centers throughout our body, from the top of our head to the bottom of our feet. And when you go in for a Reiki session with a practitioner, they're concentrating on seven key chakra centers, from the top of your head or your crown chakra to your reproductive area, which is called the root chakra, and working to get those in the proper alignment that they were created to operate in. So say that, you know, like I was sharing with you earlier, you know, had a lot of deaths in the family this year, and so that could very easily lead to a lot of energy being expended in your heart area, whereas then perhaps your throat chakra or your first eye may be affected. Could be affected by that over use of energy from out of the heart chakra. And so what Reiki practitioners and sound practitioners do is to get that energy to flowing properly so that it's evenly distributed throughout your system. And it's practiced throughout the world. It's not so much in the United States for whatever reasons, but it's very beneficial. It's non-invasive, which means, you know, people don't have, you don't have to lay hands on you, or your body doesn't have to be touched. The practitioner is not a healer. The practitioner is a helper. You and your creator are the healers of your body temple. So again, don't ever give your power away to someone else that want to take responsibility for your healing. Your healing is done between you and your maker.
Awesome. That sums it all up right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I tell you, this has really, really been great. And I thank you so much, William, for coming on and bringing up the questions and adding that the extra, and the two brothers, Ken and brother Sabir. You know, that's all of what we need is for us to share our comments with each other and validate, you know, support what we're doing, and creating that community, you know, where people can trust and believe what's being said. So I thank everyone for participating tonight. And we continue next week with family traditions and family devotion for this month of November. We have Damon.
December. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I said December.
Okay,
family devotion and family traditions in Oh, I may have said November. December. Excuse me for that. So we'll see you guys same time next week. Thank you so much for being with us. And my big brother, thank you so much for helping me to get this show done tonight and get the information disseminated to our audience. And you were just so fabulous. I thank you so much.
Thank you, sweetheart. Love you much.
Love you, too. All right, you guys. I'll see you next week. Y'all be good until the end. Stay safe.
Bye. Bye.